Blog Talk Radio.
This is JJ Bomber. You are listening to Well Armed Radio.
Well, good evening, sheepdogs. Welcome to Well Armed Radio, where freedom is our best friend. Thank you for joining us in our vigorous, relentless, and I guess I can't say weekly pursuit of freedom, and I probably can't say bi-weekly pursuit of freedom, because, but at least monthly pursuit of freedom. Broadcasting live from the very Well Armed studio in New Berlin, Wisconsin. My name is Nick Clark, the president of Wisconsin Carry, and the host of Well Armed Radio. And it's my pleasure to talk to the most informed gun owners in the state. That would be you guys. You are your community's finest. So with a face for radio and a voice for silent movies, it's a pleasure to be with you. And just sitting here, a free man trying to stay afloat in the sea of communism, but encourage you to be a part of the show with your calls, ideas, questions, comments, criticism, participation. You could do that by calling 563-999-3787, 563-999-3787. And you could also interact, as my brother-in-law is doing on the chat. Shout out to Mike. I don't think you can do it from a phone, but I think if you're on a computer, you can do it from the chat option on Blog Talk Radio. And of course, if you are like 90% or more of the listeners, you're listening on the podcast at some point in the future. Today is September 11th, 2002, 21 days from September 11th. And it's just, so I guess before I start the show with the usual warning, which is no sacred cows here, I'll just start with September 11th. And, you know, every year I have a little tradition. I think for my generation, September 11th, just a transformative event. For my generation, Generation X, I guess I'd be late Generation X, maybe a little bit of the end of the innocent. It seemed like before September 11th, and I talk about this every year, but it's just something to remember, to reminisce about, because I think if you don't think about it, then you forget about it. And I'm not talking about just the event itself, but if you don't think about it, you forget about it. And then the new normal becomes just the normal, and the old normal becomes forgotten. And I'd like to point out to people that before September 11th, it was the only place where you had to go through security was an airport, and it was mild security, but it was an airport. You didn't get bag checks at stadiums, sporting events, festivals. I mean, none of that. It was unheard of. In fact, it all came in after September 11th. And it was all ushered in under this guise of safety and security, but there's all kinds of alternative motivations. We don't need to get into those, but briefly, I mean, whether it's state fair trying to keep people from bringing their, or Summerfest trying to keep people from bringing in their own alcohol or whatever, but under the guise of safety, that, you know, this tremendous loss of freedoms that we experienced on September 11th, in the wake of September 11th. And I contend that, look, we were safer on September 11th at 11 o'clock a.m. In fact, the people who proved that we were a safer country on September 11th at 11 o'clock a.m. was the passengers, I call them, collectively the crew, of Flight 93, which crashed into Pennsylvania. They heard what happened. And before that, we were conditioned to be little sheep. Your plane gets hijacked, you sit down in your seat and you wait for it to land and the terrorists to make their demands. Like, again, as a child, I remember seeing the Pan Am or TWA flight that was sitting on the tarmac of somewhere in the Middle East or Europe or something. I don't even remember where it was, but I just remember the video of the Pan Am flight, or not Pan Am, a TWA flight that was hijacked. And so that's what used to be hijacks. But we realized on September 11th, 2001, that the game had changed and we were instantly safer. We weren't safer because of these strip searching grandmas at the airports. We weren't safer because of all this TSA bullshit. We were safer on September 11th at 11 a.m. about, when even the passengers, the heroes, the fighters on Flight 93 realized from cell phone communications with loved ones and so on and so forth that their plane was a missile, not a pawn in a negotiation, and they took over that, recaptured the cockpit, but just not in time. I mean, I think the flight recorders indicate they did breach the cockpit. It just wasn't in time to. Or having breached cockpit, they weren't able to get the terrorists from the seats. I mean, the terrorists were probably seatbelted in. So the terrorists just, you know, pointed the plane to the ground and stuffed it into the ground. We now know that the fighter jets that were scrambled were unarmed. There was nobody at ready. Some of these National Guard fighter jets that were scrambled, their orders were to, when they took off, this was on Fox News Day, but I've read this before, their orders were to ram any plane that got near a populated area. So I think one of them was a female pilot, and she was assigned. I don't even remember what area she was assigned to, but yeah, they didn't have time to arm the planes, and we were a passive country at that time, not prepared for something like this. And so she went up with an unarmed plane, and their only tactic was going to be to ram into the jets that were still in the air. And fortunately for those pilots, they didn't have to. The heroes on Flight 93 took care of that. And I think the names come to mind, Todd Beamer, the Let's Roll, that phrase that was either heard on people's cell phone conversations with him or something. But I forget the names of any others, but Todd Beamer's name sticks out in my head. But, you know, bless those heroes who and they had no choice. And that's to make a quick parallel to self-defense here. That's the wonder. I don't want to diminish what they did, because there's certainly still people that would have been on that plane, Flight 93, who are probably like, no, just sit down, be, you know. But the thing about and there's probably people who, when they're attacked or threatened in a dark alley, the stereotypical dark alley by a thug or whatever, they throw their wallet at them or people that are carjacked. They just, here, take my car. Here, do you need, take my wallet? You know, but that's just some people's nature. But then you also have the fighters and the people who don't. But I think that the prospect of life or death turns more people than not into fighters. And that's why concealed carry works so damn well. Case in point, Uvalde, Texas. Those coward-ass police, and I'll limit my I'll throw it on all of them. The coward-ass police who refused to go in while there was still shooting going on, while there were kids on the phone with 911, and I don't care. I'm not going to limit this to leadership and police. I'm going to limit it to every cop there because I've seen the video. You know, they had to kind of half sort of like one guy who I guess his wife, he was a cop, his wife was a teacher. He tried to start walking down the hall, but he didn't give it a good effort. If I'm in that building, I'm running down that hall and there ain't a damn person in there that's going to stop me. So anybody who, those coward cops, whatever, 300-400 of them that sat there for 90 minutes while kids were murdered. And some kids were already shot, but then they bled out. And this is just like Oak Creek Sick Temple. They didn't go in for whatever, an hour, 2 hours. There was people with one gunshot wound in the leg. They bleed out because of no medical attention. In the meantime, the cop outside gets shot 13 times and he survives because he got quick medical attention. Now I'm getting off in the weeds here, so I'm going to roll this back in. But here's the wonder of self-defense, why concealed carry, open carry, big person, why it works so well is because when you're faced with life or death, you don't have a choice. You don't get to sit in the hallway of the school in Uvalde, Texas and think, do we go in? Do we not? Do we set up a perimeter? Is this a hostage situation? Is it not? When you're the one that's under attack, you know exactly where the threat is. You know exactly where the threat is coming from, and it's typically coming right at you. Now, again, these people who were on the plane, the threat wasn't coming at him, but they had no choice. The threat presented itself, and it was act or die. And again, there's still people in the case of act or die. I think we call them conditioned black in the Cooper's color-coded condition characterizations. You know, there's condition white and yellow and red and orange. And then black is people that can't function. They just freeze up. But, you know, condition white is your average idiot walking around, not paying attention. Condition yellow is people who are always kind of keeping an eye out. Condition orange is people that are keeping an eye out traditionally. And then they observe something that's not, doesn't mean, make, mean they're ready to act, but means that they're on alert for something. And then something is out of the ordinary. And then condition red is time to act. That line in the sand was crossed. That initiating moment occurred, and you decide that you have to act. But that's the thing. When you are faced with a threat, when your life is in danger, you don't have the luxury of sitting back and hemming and hawing and thinking about it. It's act or die. And in the case of most situations, the threat is coming at you, or it wouldn't be a threat. And so that's why you personally being armed is the best way to defend yourself, because you're the one that's under attack. You're the only one that you know is going to be there. You might be alone. You might be with one other person. You might just be with your kids. You might just be with your family, but the police won't be there. The police show up with their AR-15s and their body armor and all that stuff well after the shooting's all over, except in Uvalde, Texas, when they show up when the shooting's still going on and stick in the hallway for 90 minutes. You're the only one that you have to be your own bodyguard. You're the only one you can count on for your own self-defense. And when you're the one in the best position to act in your self-defense. So these people on the plane in over Pennsylvania on September 11th, they realized it was fight or die. They chose fight, like I believe the majority of people would, and not all, because there's still those pacifists who are just going to curl up in a ball and suck their thumb until the good Lord comes to take them home. But for most people, fight or die, they're going to fight. And you'll bring the fight out of people that you never thought there was fight in, when they're faced with, life or death situations. So we were safer on September 11th. I would posit that the biggest leap to, safety came on September 11th when we all realized that it was a new game. It was a new dynamic. And that's when we became safer, and all the Patriot Act and all this bullshit loss of freedoms that we experienced. Maybe a few of those things had marginal effects on our safety. But the biggest effect on our safety was just the knowledge and just the realization. You know, it's like the tagline for Well-Armed Radio is knowledge is your best defense, but a good backup never hurts. Knowledge is your best defense. It's your first line of defense. And on September 11th, we had the knowledge that the game had changed and that you don't just sit back and wait for a hostage negotiation to take place. You have to act, at least with these Middle Eastern terrorists, radical Islamic terrorists, or you're going to die. And so, you know, September 11th, I've said this every year. I mean, it was just surreal to be in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I was at home. I was watching the Today Show when the plane started to hit. I thought, and I hate to go through this in detail because I do it every year, but I thought, my gosh, the first plane hit, I thought, wow, if that's an air traffic control mistake, I mean, someone's career is over. And then the second plane hit, and I was like, what? And then immediately it was like, oh, this was intentional. This is terrorism. This was, and then I go down to change. I was heading to work because at the time I worked for a tech company that was really flexible on hours before flexibility on hours was a thing. And so I get ready and I'm getting dressed and I'm listening to the Today Show still. And then they're interviewing, I think his name is Nick Mikleshevsky, who was the Pentagon correspondent for NBC News. He was on a phone interview. And while he was on the interview, he's like, you know, there was just, the building just shook. There was a big explosion here at the building. He was at the Pentagon. And then they realized, oh, the Pentagon was struck. And then now I'm driving to downtown Milwaukee. And I'm looking at the sky, wondering if I'm going to see a plane fly into the world, to the U.S. Bank building, the tallest building in Milwaukee at the time. And that was just surreal. And then you think about Chicago and Milwaukee wouldn't, and it didn't seem super likely because Milwaukee's not a tier one metropolitan area like New York, like Chicago. But if I was in Chicago, for sure, you'd have been like, I mean, in Milwaukee, I was thinking, yeah, it's probably low probability, but still realistic. I mean, maybe I was a 30%, which is significant. You know, it's not like a one in a million. But I thought maybe 30% chance it happens in Milwaukee, but you didn't know. I was looking at the sky wondering. But if I was in Chicago, I would have probably thought it's more likely than not. I probably would have thought it was like a 60, 70% chance that Chicago was going to get a hit too with a plane into the Sears Tower, at the time Sears Tower. And so just surreal, just a surreal experience. You know, you guys lived, if you know, you're listening to the show, you probably lived it too. It was funny because my daughter puts on her Instagram story, 9/11, never forget. And I'm like, babe, you weren't even born yet. You need to, you know, it just, it's funny because it's, you know, some people just do, and I'm not accusing my daughter of, you know, being a pose or anything, but just, you know, it doesn't have, I mean, our youngest is 21. So he had just been born. He was about a month old when September 11th happened. And so obviously he has no firsthand memories of it either. And of course, you know, the kids, they have seen it on the news for, you know, since they were kids and they've seen it on the news. So it's not that it has zero impact on them. But I think the other thing that I just reflect upon, you know, is I remember how the country did come together. And I hate that because I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, the country came together, because that's such a pansy thing to say in some situations, because too often country coming together means compromise and throw in with the Democrats and that kind of thing. And I don't, but the country came together. It just didn't feel like Republican and Democrat. It just felt like we were all Americans for a while. And that didn't last for long. I mean, maybe it was 6 months, maybe it was, you know, but it for a little while, it felt like we were all on the same team. And I don't think I've really felt that in this country since then. And I don't think I ever will again. I think we're going to see freedom again in this country. I think we're going to get ourselves back from, we're currently over the cliff right now. I mean, we aren't on the slippery slope to socialism, fascism, communism. I mean, we're over the cliff, but we're hanging by a rope. We're hanging by a long line. And so I do think we're going to claw ourselves back up over the cliff and 2022, 2024. And I do think we're going to restore freedom again in this country. And but that notwithstanding, that 40-45% of the country that's just stark commies, they're not coming back. They're not going to come over and start wanting to make America great again. They've had their opportunity for fascism. They've had their opportunity for totalitarianism, and they love it. And they're not going back without a fight. And that's why we take the fight to them, and we win, and we restore freedom, and we make America great again for a second time with the help of Donald Trump and hopefully some more politicians who are willing to do what's right and necessary for this country. And so, yeah, September 11th, you know, I'll just a day that's burned in my memory, burned in yours, I'm sure. And just a day of reflection. And again, it just, but not just the date itself, but remember how things change. Remember all these things that were ushered in because of September 11th. And the probably most notable one is just all these public events in the wake of September 11th. They use that as a justification to start putting magnetometers at sporting events and bag checks and all this other stuff. And September 11th was what ushered that in. So, otherwise, we haven't had a show for maybe it was a month. You know, summer's, I guess, officially kind of, well, not meteorologically or the astronomical summer, I guess, goes to the 21st of September, but realistic summer is over. Kids are back to school. Interesting summer. Probably one of the worst summers of my in the last 20 years that I can remember, just with stress. And at the end of the day, you know, nothing that I'm going to sit here and blather over on the show. But just I still had fun, and it was still a great summer and some great memories. But yeah, just full of stress. A lot of it unfounded, a lot of it just temporary kind of stuff, but this summer can good riddance. Fall is my favorite time of year. This is absolutely my favorite time of year. One of the big things we're going to be doing this year, new thing, we always, during the summer, every Saturday, summer and fall, every Saturday, we're on the boat if it's not raining. And then once we put the boat away, which is usually like maybe first week of November, sometimes is our last day out. Then after that, it's hiking season. And this year, we're putting a little twist on that. Last year, we bought some kayaks to use for the early hiking season, maybe do a little bit more kayaking or we did some kayaking instead of just hiking. But this year, our new thing is going to be, I'm calling it tramping for truck camping. we've hiked everywhere on the Ice Age Trail and pretty much every other trail you could possibly think of worth hiking, from basically Janesville and even west of that. I mean, out to, it's not out to Monroe. What's some of those small towns? Albany. I can't think of some of the small towns out southwest of Madison that we've hiked the Ice Age Trail. But pretty much from there all the way up to Elkhart Lake and even beyond, to Manitowoc, because we've done the Ice Age Trail on the Manitowoc. So, I mean, then we've also done the Ice Age Trail up by Devil's Lake and up by Merrimack and Lodi. And so for us to get to some new hiking, it's at least a 2-hour drive. And that just kind of, when our hiking day usually starts at like leaving Milwaukee area, New Berlin, around 1 o'clock on Saturday, by the time we get somewhere, it's like 3 o'clock. And in the early, late fall, early winter, I mean, it's dark at 4:30. So I bought this inflatable truck topper. It's called, if you go to the website is getflated.com. And it's called the Flated, F-L-A-T-E-D. So the website is getflated.com. And I've been looking for something we looked at a travel trailer. If I could have fit that in my garage, because I don't like keeping stuff outside, and my HOA probably would throw a fit if you store it in the driveway. We might still do that in the interim, just to get us a little bit more radius, a little bit more reach with our weekend hiking. I got this flated topper. You inflate it. It's like if you ever had been on a stand-up inflatable paddleboard, same kind of material, same kind of concept. It takes about 3 minutes to inflate with the power pump that they put on. And it's super light. One person, you pick it up, you set it on the truck. It literally takes me 3 minutes to set it on my truck bed. strap it down and you can go, and you can go 90 miles an hour. You can go to YouTube and watch videos of this thing being tested. It's super cool. It's not like, you know, the best polished fit and finish. I mean, it's an inflatable truck topper, but so it's the kind of thing I'm not going to leave in my truck all week long, but throw it on Friday, strap it down. I bought this little sleeping mat, which are super expensive. This thing was like $300. But now the new sleeping mats, they actually have high density foam inside of them. Plus they're inflatable as well. So it's not your grandfather's air mattress or your parents' air mattress kind of thing. So I got one that fits in the back of the truck between the wheel wells. I've got a Blue Yeti power pack that I'm going to order, which can run. This thing is like, if you go to blueyeti.com, Bluetti power, just Google Blue Yeti, Bluetti. And I'm looking at this one. It's called the Blue Yeti AC200 Max. You can run a microwave off this battery pack. It's got wireless charging on top of it for your cell phones. It's got every kind. It's basically like a generator without gas. People, they call them solar generators because people buy solar panels for them and plug them in. Or you can just charge it at your house, and then you've got power like literally for the whole weekend. You can run a microwave, you know, for an hour on it. Of course, you only run a microwave for a couple minutes at a time. So you only need to, you're not going to run the thing dead on that. So, I mean, you could run, you know, a microwave for a two-day trip. You can run the microwave whenever you need it. You could run a hair dryer. You could run, certainly charge your phones. You could run a cook plate to cook your food. Of course, you've got the microwave and the cook plate. You could run your tablet. If you got a little TV, I mean, where we're going, you probably wouldn't have good TV reception anyway, plus you know, finding a good antenna in a truck. So, but throw this truck bed topper on, throw the inflatable bed in the back. The dog can sleep in the back of the truck. I have a crew cab truck, so he rides back there anyway. He can sleep back there. I can actually open the sliding rear, and then this inflatable truck topper, you can reach through. It has an open window on the front too, so we can reach through and pet the dog and make sure he's okay and keep him calm at night and stuff. But yeah, I'm super excited about it. So we'll be able to, essentially, we could leave on Friday night, you know, leave at 5 o'clock, drive 2 hours, by 7 o'clock, we get to where we're going, kind of park, and you can stealth camp in it. So like you can park it, cause like you've got a travel trailer in the back. People know that you're camping, but this thing, you could park it anywhere. It's got tinted windows, and you know, you could stealth camp wherever you want. And of course we plan to stealth camp like at kind of the trailheads. So it's just going to be super cool. Then, you know, chill out Friday night, you know, get there at 7, chill out for a couple hours, go to sleep, wake up in the morning, cook your breakfast, you know, fart around, scratch your balls, and then go for maybe a little morning hike, come back, eat lunch, maybe go for a little bit longer afternoon hike, get done with the hike, have a couple drinks, go out to dinner, and then maybe drive back Saturday evening. You know, if you're driving back from at 7 o'clock, get back to the New Berlin area at 9. But it's just, rather than trying to make it will extend our hiking reach to places that we couldn't before. So I just thought I'd mention that because it's super cool. They make these things for, you know, mid-size pickups and full-size pickups. Getflated.com if you're interested. I'll give you some more reviews when we end up doing it and getting into our, you can Google or you can YouTube truck camping. Again, I think I've seen a couple people call it tramping. I don't think I'm the one to coin that phrase, but I just thought of the other day, yeah, tramping. That's what we're going to do. We're going to tramp. So that's what we're going to be doing this winter, fall and winter, is some tramping to extend our reach beyond the places that we've already hiked pretty much everything, get to some new areas, and make it an overnight. And then once we get done doing that, you know, then maybe we do get a travel trailer and go for weekends. But, you know, I think we got some cool stuff, places we want to go. I think just for like an overnight or a weekend, I mean, you're not going to want to stay in the back of your truck for a week by all means. I mean, you can't shower. I mean, and in the winter, the campgrounds, I think the showers are probably all, there's some winter campgrounds that are open year round, but I think the showers are winterized. So yeah. One day without, you know, if you shower on Friday and then wake up Saturday, by Saturday night, I mean, hiking, you're going to want to, I'm not going to want to do a whole weekend or certainly not more than two nights. Without a shower. So that's the plan. And I'll keep you guys, certainly you'll hear about it if you listen to the show. Speaking of topics I want to get into tonight, so I wrote this down. I thought of these just today. First thing I'm going to talk about, my first two topics are obsessions. And the first is, like, I just don't get the obsession with the royal family. Now, I get it in some respects. Like, I get why the media, because, see, the media loves to flaunt. Here's what the media is. Because, like, if you want to know people who just love and obsess over celebrities, like, anybody in the media, like Milwaukee television reporters, as an example, they are public media figures. They want to be more popular public media figures. So they seem to know, like, everything about celebrities. They're very interested in celebrities. Like, they know the celebrity gossip, the celebrities there, because they want to be one. But I don't get why. So some of this is just they obsess over the royal family because they obsess over any celebrities. But, like, the royal family, like, and you, I'm not the first person to say this. I mean, we kicked the British out of America in before 1776. And so our obsession with the royals ended with kicking the royals' ass out of the country. But there's still so many people, and I'm even non-media types, who are so engrossed in the royal family. And it's like, look, I don't even get the obsession with sports figures. Like, I guess I should say I partially get it. Like, I don't obsess over sports figures. I don't obsess over famous people. Maybe famous people who, like, are at the real top of their game. Like, the people that I admire are successful business people, like Donald Trump. I'd much rather meet, like, the CEO of a big corporation and pick their brain, or spend a day with a centimillionaire and learn from them than just. But I don't idolize or fan is short for fanatic. I'm not a fanatic about any person, but at least people who, like, obsess over sports figures. And again, I don't mean to be pejorative, but people who get into sports figures and sports teams, I get it. It's entertainment. But, like, the Royals, like, why obsess over the Royals? Because that's not – look, if you want to obsess over Aaron Rodgers, I wouldn't. I'm not going to put an Aaron Rodgers – I'm not going to put the jersey from another man on my back with another man's name. Like, and for me in high school – and again, this is going to be – I have friends that do this. I probably have family that do this. So I don't mean to be this is just me personally. And, you know, I can be a dick. So, like, putting the jersey with a dude's name on the back of it, that's what – girls did in high school with their boyfriend's jersey. So, like, and I'm probably overthinking that, but that's me. I'm an overthinker. So that's why, like, I would never put a dude's jersey on my back. Cause, like, again, that's what a chick did in high school with her boyfriend. Now I get, but I do understand, like, look, I'm a big Michael Jordan fan. That's when I actually watched and paid attention to sports. But they do something. Like, they're really good at their sport. Even a musician is very good at their craft. So I get, in some respects, it still doesn't make sense to me, but I, in some ways, understand why people can obsess over athletes and rock stars. But the royal family, like, they don't do anything. Like, they're like, I mean, I've heard this term from someone, they're like the world's most famous welfare recipients, the world's richest welfare recipients. Like, they're literally just figureheads. And I mean, I'm not from, obviously, the UK. And so maybe there's things that they do, whatever, charitable this and whatever. I mean, but I just don't get it. I don't get the obsession with the royals. I understand why the media does it, because the media just loves celebrity, but I don't get why regular folks are so obsessed. I know some, here's just my working theory. I think there's some people that just have that, still that fairy tale mentality that there's kings and queens and princesses and, you know, just something from their Disney saturated youth, where kings and queens and princesses are still like their fairy tale dream in real life. And maybe that's the reason they obsess over them. I don't know. But like I listened to Dan O'Donnell on WISN this past week, and he's just every segment, the day that the Queen Elizabeth dies, every segment he's opening. So, you know, Queen Elizabeth, her family's rushing to her side, like, and talking for like 5 minutes to start off every segment. I'm like, dude, I'm like, I'm convinced the audience of, and again, see Dan O'Donnell, like it or not, he's still a conservative media type, but he's still a media type. And I think deep down, a lot of conservative media types really want to, their secret desire is to be adored like the mainstream media types. So I still think that even conservative media types tend to get into celebrity worshiping a bit more, celebrity fawning a bit more. And that maybe that's why Dan O'Donnell was so into the what was going on with the royal family. But again, I just don't get it. For regular folks, like, why the hell would you care about the royal family? I mean, again, if you care about Aaron Rodgers, yeah, he makes you happy when he throws a touchdown and your team wins. I get that. I still wouldn't wear a jersey on my back with another man's name on it, but I get it. But like the royals, like they don't do anything. And so to be so interested in, I don't know. It just, next obsession that I was going to talk about, and I'm going to pick on Dan O'Donnell from WISN Talk Radio again, but he's only one of, even like I love Clay and Buck, Clay Travis, Buck Sexton took over for Rush Limbaugh. I'm getting to love their show. I, you know, like many conservatives, I don't just trust someone when they've kind of earned their cred with me. They're really staunch against the COVID bullshit. And they're just, I don't know. I really like them. And I really enjoy listening to them. I don't like them better than Rush Limbaugh in his heyday, but I do like them better than Rush Limbaugh his last couple years. Cause Rush Limbaugh's last couple years wasn't at his top of his game. He was, you know, doing his cancer treatments and stuff. But I think I like Clay Travis and Buck Sexton. I think I find them more relatable, more, again, not better than Rush Limbaugh when Rush was in his prime, but better than Rush Limbaugh at the end of his career. And again, that's not Rush's fault. That's the fault of, you know, his cancer and his diagnosis and whatnot. But it's funny because there's two of them now, and one of them loves to fawn over the royals and one of them doesn't. So it was interesting. You got both perspectives there, but when I talk about obsessing over polls, they even obsess over polls. And here's the thing, like as a conservative, have we not yet learned that polls don't mean jack shit, but yet people still want to upset conservatives who should know that polls are bullshit, who should know that polls are, look, every poll always starts out with the Democrat leading by 10 points, universally. Every race that even every race that Scott Walker won, he was down by 8 points, 10 points when they started putting polls out, you know, 6 months before the election or whatever. And then all of a sudden, as it gets closer, the polls tighten. How come the polls tighten every single time? And it's always the Republican draws closer and then often would beat the Democrat. It's because the polls are bullshit. And so this obsession with polls by conservative talk radio, still, I just don't get it. And there should be, especially when you're a week out, maybe, because I think that like pollsters still, when it gets really close, and here's my theory going all along, is that when it's early on, pollsters don't try to be accurate. They would rather push poll. They would also rather use their polling to try to say to the general population, oh, look, here's the guy that everybody likes. Everybody likes Mandela Barnes for Senate. He's got a 10-point lead. And then there's some people who just want to pick the winner. They want to support the winner, and they're just going to support them. But at the end of the day, or closer to the election, they still want their poll to be somewhat accurate. So they try to do more accurate polls, and that's why the polls always get closer, because I think towards the election, the last poll before the election, the pollsters try to get it accurate. They still don't, but they try to be more accurate. You know, they try to get closer so they don't look like idiots and lose all their credibility with people that pay pollsters for their data and their research and stuff like that. But because every election is a moment of truth for pollsters. Now, I've said this for years, other referendums, like when they put like concealed carry on the Marquette poll that polls people on concealed carry, that is, there's never a moment of truth. There's never a referendum that's going to go out to the whole state. So those pollsters can say whatever they want. They can say that only 25% of the population supports concealed carry. They can say that only 25% of the population supports school grounds carry. They can say that 80% of the population wants universal background checks. And they do. And that's because those polls never have the moment of truth. And a poll on candidates has a moment of truth. It's called the election. A poll on an issue polling, never has a moment of truth because issues are rarely ever, and sometimes they are, but issues are rarely ever on a statewide ballot, like a referendum, where you could say this poll that the Marquette took, you know, concealed carry. The Marquette poll, before concealed carry was passed, is back in 2010. The concealed carry only had like 45% support in the polls or something like that. And yet, you know, Republicans moved it forward, it passed, and nobody lost their seat because of it. And then now they, everybody, even Democrats voted. Concealed carry was one of the most bipartisan bills that passed in Scott Walker's term. Even Lena Taylor voted for concealed carry. But concealed carry was never on the ballot as a referendum issue to where you could say, oh, here's what people really believe. So for these issues, whether it's pot, and again, pot's been on some like county referendums, but nothing statewide. So you never get a moment of truth, a fact expose of issue polls. So the pollsters can say whatever they want, and I think that they do. I think if the pollsters are against concealed carry, they push poll in a way to get negative responses toward questions on concealed carry and then say, oh yeah, only 45% of the people support concealed carry. But when we did have a moment of truth on polls, on issue polls, was 1998, when there was a referendum statewide to amend the Wisconsin Constitution, Article 1, Section 25. The people shall have the right to keep and bear arms for security, defense, hunting, recreation, and any other lawful purpose. That passed with like 74% of the population in Wisconsin. So 74% of the population, and that's not a watered down Second Amendment. That's a more bold statement. There's no being necessary for the security of a free state. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. That, you know, a well-regulated militia being necessary for the security. There is not that what some in today's world try to obfuscate with this confusing, oh, that was just referring to the National Guard. It wasn't. And you can read the Federalist Papers and find out that it wasn't. You can read the writings of the Founding Fathers and it wasn't. This was an individual right. They always intended it to be that. Excuse me. So it's just a word game now with that introductory clause of the Second Amendment. But Wisconsin's referendum question is very straightforward. Should people have the right to keep and bear arms for security, defense, hunting, recreation, and any other lawful purpose? And 74% of the population said yes. That tells you that only 25% of the population in Wisconsin is really anti-gun. And I've maintained that. And that was in 1998. And I would submit that with the proliferation of concealed carry across the country and all sorts of stuff, concealed carry is only more popular now, and it would be a higher percent. But again, back to this original topic, I just don't get the conservative talk media's obsession with polls that have been proven wrong over and over and over and over. They were wrong on Trump when he was running against Hillary. They've been wrong on, they're always wrong on every other Republican candidate early in the race. And then sometimes late in the race, they are more accurate. But when you're 3, 4, 5 months, that's why when conservatives are now talking, like even Clay Travis and Buck Sexton were like talking about polls a couple weeks ago and saying, oh, the polling isn't looking as good as it was, as you would think it should be for Republicans. It's like, man, I just don't get why conservatives obsess over polls when we know they're such bullshit. And again, maybe the poll a week before because that's the one that I think the pollsters try the hardest to be close with. But honestly, this analyzation of polls, and it's one thing if it's just musing like, haha, because I'm up for anything that exposes what liars and how phony and how factless the mainstream media are. So if it's a discussion of polls for the purposes of saying, hey, look, they're saying, you know, this candidate, this Republican is down 10 points and, you know, he'll probably win by 15. That kind of discussion, cool, because I'm up for anything that discredits the mainstream media. But anything that, like, that they would actually make policy-based decisions on polling or even strategy-based decisions on polling, if you're adjusting your strategy because of what the polls are saying, well, you're a fucking idiot because you know the polls are wrong. Any conservative knows the polls are wrong, especially months before an election. The only poll that they try to get close is like the week before an election. And a week before an election, you're not going to have time to adjust your strategy. So if you're trying to adjust your strategy based on polling 3 months before an election, when there's still time to have your strategy take effect, you're an idiot because you're making strategic changes to your campaign strategy based upon polling that we all know as conservatives is bullshit. But yet, whether it's Milwaukee Talk Radio, Clay Travis, Buck Sexton, they just love to obsess over polls, even early in a race. And I just don't get it. Run your race, ignore the polls. Don't apologize. Freedom has a huge constituency. Don't apologize. Don't be afraid of negative press. Negative press is your friend, because if the press is against you, I'm telling you, 55 to 60% of the population is for you. If the press makes you sound like a crazy guy on a mainstream issue like crime, oh, he wants to throw everybody in jail, I'm telling you, that appeals to the majority of people would support your position. That's how you wag the media dog. You stick by your position that the media thinks the population is on their side and the population is actually on your side. And those issues are crime, self-defense, immigration. There's a couple others that popped to the top of mind with my, but those are all issues where the majority of people, especially crime, the majority of people feel the same way that the conservative sides do. Same thing with immigration. The majority of people feel the same. And I honestly think it's the same with all this woke bullshit. I think it's only like the 25% hardcore activist, party loyalist Democrats who buy into all this woke bullshit. I think the rest of people are like, yeah, you know, I think a man's a man and a woman's a woman. And if you want to, you know, be a cross-dresser or trans, that's fine, but you're not changing who you are. I think that's even another 60, but the media would have you believe that everybody's in for this woke bullshit, and they really aren't. But that's how you can get the media to give you coverage that ends up being positive for you, because they think exposing your position is going to be negative coverage. But the reality is most people actually support your position, so it turns out to be positive coverage. That's why Trump got like $1 billion of in-kind contributions from the media. The media thought that Trump's immigration stance in 2016 was not a mainstream held view. Because remember, that was when even Republicans were afraid to be against illegal immigration. And Trump made it okay to be against illegal immigration again. Oh, you're incompassionate. These people just want a better life, you know, blah, 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 blah. Trump came out against illegal immigration, and the media was happy to spout that far and wide, thinking that it was going to damage his campaign. It actually helped his campaign. That's how you wag the media dog. So you can do it on the crime issue. The media thinks that everybody wants this restorative justice, whatever, whatever, and they don't. The majority of people want law and order. So like the Black Lives Matter crap, as trendy as that was, you come out against it, the media will make you look like the crazy guy, and it actually is positive press for you. So they'll give you, because here, if it's something like, I'm trying to think of a good example, it's something like, oh, something positive that like Trump was doing for the economy or whatever, they know that most people would support that. And so they just won't report that because they won't report something that Trump was doing that was positive for the economy, because the majority of people would want something positive for the economy again, except for people that want Trump to fail and want the economy to fail so Trump fails. So they won't report on those kinds of stories. And so you can't go out and do a press conference on those positive things because the media won't cover it, because they think that the public would support that and it would make you look good. The media will only cover things that they think will make you look bad. And so you stick to the issues that the media thinks will make you look bad in the public, but that will actually make you look good in the public. And that's how you wag the media dog. So again, ignore the polls. This obsession with polls is just absurd. 3 months out from an election and making any kind of strategic decisions based upon polls that conservatives should know are bullshit. What the hell are you thinking? And I try to think of why people, the conservatives, and talk media gets, it's just because, well, one, I think they need topics to talk about. And two, I just think that people, have you ever think of, to use a sports analogy, if the Packers were 7-point underdogs to the Minnesota Vikings, do you think that the Packers coaching staff would say, you know what, we're going to change our game? Oh, we thought we were going to come in as favorites to the Minnesota Vikings, but then, you know, 7 days before the game, we came out as 7-point underdogs. So we're going to change our coaching strategy because we're 7-point underdogs. And again, polls and odds makers, it's not exactly the same thing, but it kind of is, because there's actually odds makers on elections. Like, and it's not in the United States, but in I think it's in England, they do have polls. They have odds makers that set odds on election outcomes. So then it is an odds making thing. And I've heard Clay Travis and Buck Sexton cite those odds when it comes to elections. But to prove my point of why you shouldn't, the point I'm trying to make is to change your strategy because of a poll, or to change your strategy because of the odds that some underwriter in a gambling site in England is putting on you winning your election. If the Packers thought, yeah, we're going to be favorites against the Minnesota Vikings, and then a week before when the odds come out, oh, the Packers are 7-point underdogs, do you think that the Packers coaching staff says, oh, well, we're underdogs, so we need to change our strategy for this week, and instead of this strategy, we're going to go with this different game plan? No way. They have their game plan that they think will win. And no matter what the odds makers say, if they say they're 7-point underdogs or 14-point underdogs, the coaching staff of the Packers doesn't care. They're not going to change their strategy. They're not going to change their game plan because odds makers said that they were 7-point underdogs. They're not going to say, oh, we're 7-point underdogs. All right, well, we got to figure out we need a game plan to score more points because we're 7-point underdogs. Like they wouldn't even consider adjusting their game plan because of what some stupid odds maker said. But why do politicians obsess over polls and want to, even if polls were accurate, which we know they're not, but why would you want to obsess over polls and change your strategy based upon polling, based upon odds makers? A sports team wouldn't do it. If a sports team came out as 7-point underdogs, they're not going to change their strategy. Going in, they might know, hey, we've seen the films, this team is a better team, so we're going to have to go for it on fourth down. We're going to have to, I mean, their game plan may be different because they're underdogs, but that's not because the odds makers said they're underdogs. It's because they know that this other team is a better team. And so when the odds come out, when do odds come out? Like a week before a game? When the odds come out a week before a game, they don't say, oh, we're going to change our strategy because they're, you know, we're 20-point underdogs, not 7-point underdogs. We had one game plan if we were 7-point underdogs, but now we got a different game plan if we're 20-point underdogs, because no, that wouldn't even cross their mind. So why do politicians do it? Why do politicians say, okay, we had a strategy going into the campaign, and now we're 3 months in, and the polling says that we're down 10 points. Now, again, if the polling says you're down 50 points, okay, maybe you reevaluate your strategy. But if you're within 10 points, like, that's the margin of error for these Democrat-leaning pollsters. So if you're within 10 points, you're probably striking distance or likely leading against a Democrat based upon the way these guys poll. So ignore the stupid polls. Run your race, stick to your strategy, stick to your principles, and you'll win. That's my opinion. All right, last thing I was going to talk about tonight was a little story time. So I'm out on the yacht this weekend. We were going to go to Port Washington, but the wave forecast was kind of iffy. We have this pneumonia front that was supposed to come by late on Saturday. So the waves weren't too bad around noon on Saturday. You know, they're about a foot. And foot waves mean that every, 45 seconds or so, you get a two-footer. And so when it's two-foot waves, that means every, 45 seconds to a minute, you get a four-footer, three, four-footer. Two-footers are no problem. All of a sudden, you're going boom, boom, boom. You've got a good speed. Then boom, you hit a four-footer, and you're like, oh, it rattles you. So we could have made good time heading up to Port Washington. We were going to have dinner and come right back. But around 8 o'clock, the wave forecast went from like, foot and a half waves to, two and a half foot waves, and then 3 foot waves by like 9 o'clock. And I just don't trust the wave forecast enough to cut it that close. You know, if the weatherman says this front, and it's 12 hours or it's 10 o'clock on Saturday morning, and the weatherman says, yeah, this front's going to come through, this storm front's going to come through about, rain's going to come through about 9 o'clock. You think, okay, they're usually pretty accurate with those frontal boundaries coming through and triggering those thunderstorms. But, lake winds, that's a little trickier. And I didn't want to be in Port Washington at 5 o'clock, 5:30, sitting down for dinner. And all of a sudden the wind starts picking up from the north, because it was coming from the south all afternoon. And we're sitting there having dinner on an outdoor patio in Port Washington, thinking, oh man, you guys gobble your food down. Let's get in the boat and go before the waves kick up. I didn't want it. So we didn't go to Port Washington. It's a good thing we didn't, because the front did come through a little sooner than I think they expected. The lake winds picked up. And it was probably about 6:30, which is right about the time we'd have been heading back. And I think we would have run into some nasty waves coming back down yesterday for an unpleasant ride. So instead, I was like, well, let's just scoot down to Oak Creek. There's a private beach down there we've always wanted to hang out at. So I went down there, filled up with gas at McKinley, went down there, blew a bunch of gas going down to Oak Creek, and then got down there, and it was just a little bit too rough to want to anchor and go paddleboarding, because it's just, if you're paddleboarding around, you really want it to be pretty calm. So it was kind of a wasted trip down there, but it was a scenic trip. So we come back up towards Milwaukee, go into South Shore, drop anchor, hang out for a little bit, had a drink or two, chilling with Kim and my fiance Kim and our daughter Julia, just the three of us. Had some good tunes going on the radio. Anchor was dragging a little bit because I didn't get a good anchor set. And then we were kind of close to another boat. So I was like, rather than reset the anchor, let's just pick up the anchor. It was probably 4:35. I'm like, let's just pick up the anchor and let's cruise up to Lakeshore State Park. So we're going to cruise up to Lakeshore State Park. So we pull up the anchor. I got my Bluetooth going. I got a real good playlist, some nice good 80s and 90s music that's really got me feeling it. Cause see, this is the thing, like I have such a great memory and that a song from 1983, like just triggers this flood of like 1,000 memories of every time and place I was when I heard that song. Cause I have a phenomenal memory and a song and smells too. Like I can smell something and boom, I'll get hit with Elon Musk once did an interview and they said, what's going through your head right now? And he goes, I just have an explosion of ideas for this invention, ideas for this invention. Like for me, it's like explosion of memories. Like when I can smell something and it'll just trigger this explosion of memories within like a split second. I'm thinking of like 15 different memories, like boom, just from smelling something. A song will do the same thing. I hear a song and it just like instantly like boom, triggers like 15 memories, like 20 memories. And then they start to shift. Then I remember. So over the course of like 30 seconds, it's just like this memory, this memory, this memory, this memory, this memory, this memory. I mean, just, So it kind of is a little bit of a natural high for me when I, you know, smell something that triggers those memories and very nostalgic. So we're cruising along, we're coming back from South Shore, we're taking a nice, and usually once we get to the Inner Harbor, or actually it's the Outer Harbor, we can go full wake. We were by South Shore Yacht Club, you can't make a wake. We get into the harbor, and I, you know, I had the Sea Keeper on, so the boat was, that keeps the boat from rocking. I'm like, let's just take a real slow cruise back up to Milwaukee. We got the skyline right in front of us. Let's take a slow cruise back to Lakeshore State Park. And here's the Coast Guard sitting off to the side. I go cruising by real slow, you know, my no wake, and all of a sudden they're coming towards me. I'm like, oh, fuck, they're going to pull me over for a boarding. This is the first time I've been boarded on my new boat. So they pull up. Now we're in the inner harbor, outer harbor, I should say, outer harbor where it's choppy. And so I'm like, oh, geez. And it just, such a buzzkill. I was in such a good mood, you know, listening to music, had a, you know, had a couple drinks, just feeling, you know, wasn't worried about, you know, being intoxicated because I don't drink that much anymore. So had a couple drinks, feeling good, feeling loose. And now we got to deal with the fucking Coast Guard. So I call them on the radio. Do you mind if we go back inside the South Shore Yacht Club where it's not choppy so you guys don't bang up on my boat when you're like, they didn't answer on the radio. So then they pull by and I said, hey, can we go inside South Shore where it's calm? They're like, sure. So we go inside there. I make them pull their fenders because they got these big white fenders that are going to scratch my boat. I said, they pull their fenders off. I put my cloth covered fenders on. We go over, they hop on my boat and instead of tying up, they just two Coast Guard officers hop on. I make them put little blue booties, you know, those little booties that you would wear, like if you're going to a parade of homes. I keep some on my boat, so if the Coast Guard boards me, I make them put them on. And then you got the Coast Guard sitting here with their black combat boots with their little white boot or little blue booties over them. And I took a picture of it, threw it on my social media because that's how I roll. But anyway, so it probably takes about 20 minutes. Maybe a half hour for this boarding, safety checks, checking for life jackets, throwables, audible signals, fire extinguishers, halon system, oil placards, discharge, all this stuff. It's all. So it's, again, it's at least 20 minutes. Maybe it's a half hour. And it's just a total buzzkill. When you're done, they give you a copy of your boarding slip that says you passed everything. And then the next time, if they go to pull you over again, you can just literally wave the yellow slip as they pull up and they'll just let you go because they don't want to harass you. Because again, it's a 20 minutes to a half hour fucking ordeal. And it's like, hey, what if you had dinner plans? You're heading off the lake and now you got to do a half hour delay because of the fucking Coast Guard. I think it's unconstitutional to begin with because illegal searches and seizures, you're not doing anything wrong. Now, this has been challenged in court, but the only people that have ever challenged in court this ability for the Coast Guard, and the Coast Guard's the only one can do it. If the police are on the water, they have to have probable cause to pull you over. You have to be doing something wrong. They see you driving recklessly with your boat. They see you making a wake where you can't make a wake. You don't have your registration numbers. Now, I don't have to have registration numbers because I'm Coast Guard registered. So all my boat name is my registration number. So I don't have to put the little WS1844EW. That was my old boat registration number. Or actually, that was my first boat. My second boat was WS9493HT or something like that, 95. Anyway. But now I just, November Rain in the back of my boat, my boat name, that is my registration. So the Coast Guard can type in November Rain, New Berlin, Wisconsin on their computer and boom, it pops up my boat record, my registration. So the only people that have ever challenged the unlawful nature of these Coast Guard boardings are like drug dealers who get caught off the coast of Florida with drugs and they challenge it as unconstitutional and they've never won. I would love to see someone like on the Great Lakes take an honest challenge to the Coast Guard boardings as unconstitutional and get a judge to say, hey, look, you know, if you're within X number of miles of the international border, you know, but within, you know, because if you're within a couple miles of the southern border or I think any border, like they can stop and detain you. And I think search your vehicle. I think that's a federal law because you're within, you know, a couple miles of the border. The rest of the country, you can't just pull someone over and search their vehicle for no reason. It's Fourth Amendment protections. So it's already a Fourth Amendment, in my opinion, Fourth Amendment violation to have these safety checks and safety boardings. Obviously, I've been boating for 22 years. This is my 23rd season, so I'm used to it. I got my concealed or my I've got my Smith & Wesson air weight sitting on the dashboard, which of course they notice. And they say, is that your concealed carry there? And I said, no, that's actually my open carry. And they say, oh, do you mind if we unload it? And I said, you do what you got to do. So they go and they unload. It's so stupid. Like, okay, because I'm here on the boat with my fiance and my daughter, and I'm going to reach for my gun and start shooting. These guys, the law enforcement, like, just, okay, princess, like, when we're around, everybody's got to disarm because law enforcement's around. Like, get to your knees, peasants, because law enforcement's here in your presence. It's just, so anyway, and that's the time that you're most likely to have a negligent discharge is loading and unloading a firearm. So it's just, it's stupid that, anyway. So they unload my gun, drop the rounds out. And then do the safety check to warning. Of course, I pass. Then they get off. And then I go on my way. And then they go zipping across the harbor to do a safety check on someone else. Now, again, this is about 20 minutes to a half hour for each one. And I passed. And so if you don't pass, then it's a longer safety check because they write you up a citation or they write you up a corrective, you know, notice. So this is what they've been doing all afternoon. This is hours worth of time that the Coast Guard spent on the harbor pulling people over, pulling boaters that were doing nothing wrong over and doing their safety checks all afternoon. We make our way up to Lakeshore State Park. We leave past, the Viking cruise ship was going out when we were really cool, like the crepuscular rays from the clouds were coming down right as this Viking cruise ship was heading out in the lake and we watched it go by. It was really cool. Timed it just right. Then we got up to Lakeshore State Park, and then the winds really kicked up from the north, and it was just crazy windy. But then on the radio, I hear the Coast Guard. So this is like probably about an hour after I got my safety check boarding, and they were boarding someone else after me, so they were still out. So this is probably about a half hour after they might have finished with the guy that they pulled over after me or boarded after me, and they were maybe bored. So the Coast Guard comes on the VHF. You know, if you're on a boat, you have, and if you have a radio, you have to have it set to channel 16. You have to monitor channel 16. That's the International Hailing and Distress Channel. So on channel 16, the Coast Guard comes out, attention all vessels, attention all mariners, attention all mariners. There is a disabled fishing vessel in the vicinity of, I forget which one of the gaps it was, but there, so there's a bass boat. There's a lot of fishermen out. There was a bass boat on the harbor that lost power, and they called the Coast Guard for help. And the Coast Guard goes on the VHF radio and asks recreational boaters to assist this boat that's disabled in the harbor. And I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? You spend all afternoon, the Coast Guard spends all afternoon doing these unconstitutional boardings. And again, unconstitutional is my conclusion. Right now, the case law is that they're constitutional, but I still think they violate Fourth Amendment. All afternoon, you've got the Coast Guard doing what I consider unconstitutional boardings, but they're certainly... It's the equivalent of running a speed trap all afternoon, probably even worse than running a speed trap because, again, it's a speed trap, you're speeding. I wasn't speeding. I wasn't violating any rules. So they got all afternoon to have – there was at least four officers on this Coast Guard, their little jet boat that they use. It's not their huge trawler or their whatever. It's their little smaller boat. So they got four officers, maybe five, spending all afternoon out on that thing doing safety checks on every boat coming by in the harbor. But then when someone calls the Coast Guard with an actual maritime emergency, like you're not a, it was bad weather. If that boat got pushed out to open water or that little bass boat, 16-foot bass boat, it could have been trouble for them. There was probably life and limb in danger. When there's actually something that you might think the Coast Guard would actually be in their wheelhouse, like their core responsibilities, they go on the VHF radio and ask for recreational boaters who can assist this bass boat whose engine died. I was like, are you fucking kidding? I felt like going on because on the radio, they don't know who it's coming from. So I felt like going on the radio because channel 16, everybody'd hear it. And I felt like saying, you know, Coast Guard, and not because usually you're supposed to say United States Coast Guard, United States Coast Guard, this is vessel November rain. So instead of saying that, I would just say, you know, Coast Guard, you guys have been doing safety checks all afternoon, and now someone actually needs help, and you're going to ask, you've been harassing law-abiding boaters all afternoon. Now when someone actually needs help, which you might think is the Coast Guard's fundamental duties, you ask recreational boaters who you've been harassing all afternoon to go assist them. Give me a fucking break. But yeah, that's your government at work. That's your tax dollars at work. And isn't that just what, that's where we're at. As a, I, you know, of course it irks me because I get my, these safety checks, but that's where we're at as a country. The core responsibilities, the core things that you think that you're paying government to do and that you want government for, whether it's maintaining roads and infrastructure, the majority of your money goes for bullshit. The majority of your money goes for social spending and also and entitlements and giveaways. But then you think, okay, well, at least law enforcement. No, law enforcement, they're cutting law enforcement budgets and they're taking money out of law enforcement budgets and they're pushing it into violence prevention offices. And then the money that still goes to law enforcement, like, for example, the Coast Guard's out there doing random safety checks of law-abiding boaters all afternoon. And when something comes along that they could actually assist and you might consider, hey, this is why we pay taxes, so we got the Coast Guard out here to help people. Oh, no, we're going to go on the radio and ask for recreational boaters to assist. It's just, if that doesn't chap your ass, and that was it. I was crabby after they pulled me over for my safety check. I was in a really good mood before that. I was crabby after they pulled me over. Then the weather changes, it gets colder. And then we met up with a friend from the gym at Lakeshore State Park who was riding by on his bike. And then he starts annoying the shit out of me on my boat. You know, I invite the guy on my boat, give him a drink, and then he sits there and starts, anyway, I don't even get into it. But Nick, I think you work too much. I think you do. I'm just like, dude, what? I didn't invite you on my boat so you can sit here and question that I'm working too hard and not relaxing. Like, get out of it. But yeah, then when I heard the Coast Guard asking recreational boaters to help a vessel in distress, that was just the last straw. I was in a crap ass mood after that. So so that was my Saturday. But anyway, good to be back on the air. Good to be into fall here. Thank you, bro, for checking on the live show here, and to everybody who's going to catch this on the podcast. See, the thing is, I thought I was probably going to do a show tonight, and I knew if I would have posted the show earlier in the day that people on social media would see it, I'd probably have a larger live audience tuning in tonight, more people in the chat. But I literally decided to post the show at 10, for a 10 o'clock start, I put the show on at 10:07, I think, is when I submitted the show for... scheduled the show on Blog Talk and then popped in, and I think I was in by like 10:13, 10:15 is when I actually started broadcasting. So so for that reason I'm shafting myself out of live listenership by not posting the show till literally seconds before I start the show. So but then again, I never know what the weather's going to be like, and so I don't want to post the show on like Wednesday and then it's a beautiful day and although the sun goes down earlier. So anyway, listenership over the last, I've been doing the show since 2013, so show will be 9 years I've been doing the show. It's always light over the summer, so I take a lot of liberty with not being very regular, but come winter we'll at least be back to every other week for sure in the winter. And so great to have again, bro, thanks for being in the chat here. You guys listen on the podcast, feel free to shoot me an email if you want to react to anything, nik@wisconsincarry.org. You guys have a great week. Carry on, stay free, and be well armed.
Stop listening to the bombastic loudmouths on the radio and television and the internet. To hell with them.
This is Sniper Chick Julie. You've been listening to Well Armed Radio, and I have to know, is that a gun in your pants, or did you just really enjoy the show?